What's up, everybody? How you doing? Hey, how about Adam Hunter and Richard Hunter and the other comedian whose name I forgot? They kicked some ass. I mean, they really, really set the tone. It's going to be a fun night. So what this is a swap cast from the Phone Booth Fighting Guys and MMA Roasted. They brought us along just kind of to kind of get out of their way. No, seriously, they're great friends of ours, and we're really, really pleased and honored to be a part of it. So the Phone Booth Fighting Podcast, you know, they started up this year, and really, really proud of those guys. They really kicked some ass. Recent guests have been Bert Kreischer, Paul Stanley, Forrest Griffin. These guys, you know, they spread their wings. They don't just talk MMA. They talk about pop culture, sports, all, you know, all kinds of stuff. So, you know, catch on to those guys. They really kick a lot of ass. They're on iTunes, Stitcher, or you can go to phoneboothfighting.com. And, of course, MMA Roasted. Can't say enough about Adam Hunter and the great job he does with his cast of characters. And you can pick up that show on SoundCloud. Now, Goz and I, we host MMA Junkie Radio Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. Thank you. MMA Junkie Radio, you know, the official show of MMA Junkie, the five times winner of Best Media Source. And anyway, we got you covered for MMA. Come to our website. We got writers that kick ass, and we try and do our best Monday through Friday, two hours a day.
The door is always open, right?
Tomorrow we got Mandalay Bay. That's where our studio is. The invite's there for any of you to come anytime you want. Tomorrow we'll have. Who do we have tomorrow?
Well, it's kind of a surprise. Is it locked in?
Yeah, he's locked in. Oh, no, he's not locked in, but we have Diego Sanchez.
Yeah.
Jim
it'll
Miller.
Be a fun
yeah,
show.
It's gonna be a fun
but
show.
You know what, guys?
I had too many Heineken, sorry.
It's fight week, and we know that you guys have tons of options, tons of stuff to do. I heard some news broke. So we're very thankful that you guys are here right now supporting us. So thank you very much for coming out.
All right, so again, thank you to the LA Comedy Club for hosting us. The servers, the bartenders, they've been serving them quickly and stiffly, and we're having a great time here. We're going to bring out Richard Hunter, Frank Mir now, and Adam Hunter. How about a round of applause for them? And this is their first official swap cast. You will be able to hear the audio from the Phone Booth Fighting Show on Adam's show, and then vice versa on the MMA Roasted Show. You'll be able to hear the content that Richard and Frank produce. So it's going to be a great time. They'll open it up for Q&A. They'll discuss the latest in mixed martial arts, and you guys are going to have a blast. So without further ado, here's Frank, Richard, and Adam.
Thanks, guys. Thank you for coming out. Thank you very much. Thanks for coming out late with us. We're really excited to do this. We have no plan, okay? So just kind of whatever happens. Apparently John Jones heard we had no plan, and he wanted to contribute something to the show. So we'll get into that here in a second. But before we go any further, George and Goz, our great friends over at MMA Junkie, kind of set it all up there in the introduction. But Frank and I started Phone Booth Fighting Podcast about September, I guess. And it's just been growing and growing thanks to you guys. A lot of you guys I already talked to earlier today and from all over the world, and you're listening. And we have to say a very special thank you to our very good friend Adam Hunter from MMA Roasted Podcast. Because when we kind of came up with this idea, I started talking to Adam about it. 2 months ago, it was a firm no, you said. And then by 6 weeks, I'd softened him up a little bit. I had to work on him. But basically, we're swap casting, okay? So you guys are being recorded live. And what we're going to do is we're going to upload this as a special Phone Booth Fighting Podcast. Adam's going to have it as MMA Roasted Podcast. Is there anybody that doesn't listen to MMA Roasted? Is everybody already subscribed? You. Okay, one person. Good.
The only girls in the room.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. She does. Okay, cool. Thank
yeah.
you. It's okay.
And so, and of course, our Phone Booth Fighting. So what we're going to do, we're just going to talk. There is one chair empty. We've got a very special guest joining us, all right? Now, that special guest is being rushed over from...
John Jones.
Yeah.
From rehab.
Yeah. I thought about that. I thought, you know, is now the time to announce him as our third host? He's had some time freed up, apparently. Has everybody heard this news, right? John Jones got pulled off of UFC 200 for a USADA violation. So, yeah, I know. Before I get off topic, I just want to say that guest chair is going to be occupied momentarily by someone I think you all know and love. But he had a party hosting gig over at Red Rock Casino, so he's coming straight from there. Two here, And get this, as I understand it, he's going to be bringing his own film crew.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. So, I don't have a UFC film crew that follows me around. Apparently, he does. So, we had to get to make sure it was... Speaking of the devil, look who's here. It's the outlaw Dan Hardy, everybody.
The outlaw Dan Hardy.
Come on.
What's up, brother?
Come on up here, Dan. See you, man. All right, that's your chair. Big hand for Dan Hardy.
By the way, I don't know if you guys heard, Dana White was so upset about John Jones, he fired Helwani again. I don't know.
I cannot believe that. What was that about?
Okay, so used to getting his press credential yanked. He's got whiplash, jerking it right from his
unbelievable.
Neck. Welcome to the show, Dan. Thanks for coming
Thank
on
you.
With us. This is a real treat because, I mean, not only is Dan Hardy a beloved MMA personality, but, you know, we lost him to his native UK a couple of years ago. He used to live here in Las Vegas. So now a sighting of him over here is so rare. It's like when Pink Floyd tours. Like, you got to go see it. You know what I mean?
That's it. People treat me a lot nicer, though. They used to see me in Vegas. They're like, oh, there he is again. Uh-huh. But now I'm back. I've been away for a year. It's like, oh, is that Dan Hardy again?
Now you're exotic.
You know, he's my old wrestling partner. We used to train together, and Dan.
I have quite interesting relationships with all three of you guys. Yes. I mean, I've got a great video
Please
of you.
Please clarify.
Well, for a start, I've got a great video of you running up Mount Charleston.
Let's start with that.
Horrible.
You know what? We'll get to John Jones in a minute. You guys have not heard this story. I have. It's hilarious. And I wanted to make sure that we brought this up. All right, Dan, you told me the story like 2 years ago, but when GoPros first came out, right?
Yes, yeah. So we were training for UFC 146 at the MGM Grand. And Frank and I were training together. We did the training camp together. So
great training partner, great sparring, great... And Dan's also very motivating. He's a very positive person, very much into great practices. Always a pleasure to have around.
How hard does Dan hit, by the way?
Not so much hard hitting, but just a lot of shots.
He hits you with his mind.
But
he assaults you with his mind.
Very fluid fighter. And somehow he talked me into running uphill at Mount Charleston.
It was brilliant.
So there we go.
So we got up there. It was some ridiculous time in the morning, wasn't it, to try and get up there before
anything earlier than 11 is ridiculously early for me.
And me. That's why we trained so well together. So we got up to Mount Charleston, and I thought, okay, he's a slightly bigger guy, so I'll set him off first, because it's likely I'm going to catch up with him at some point.
No, he was being a dick. We go out there, and he straps on this GoPro, and he's all... You know what? We're going to run 3 miles. The first mile and a half are going to be up a hill through the mountains. We're at how much elevation?
About 7,000.
And you're going to take off, and then I'll go. I'm like, usually the rabbit's small and fast. I'm all, this is pretty messed up proposition you have here. So you're going to be behind me, running me down with a camera, which...
So anyway, I took off, I overtook you, and I did the loop at the top, and I was coming back down Mount Charleston. Now, Frank's aware that I have a chest cam on, right? And
he runs like 3 miles in 18 minutes.
Right.
So I've got to do an impression.
Shockingly, I don't.
So as I'm coming over the brow of the hill, and I'm jogging, I'm on my way down now, I'm feeling good, I can see Frank on his way up, and he's
hating life,
right?
Pissed off and angry.
But he sees me coming out the brow of the hill. Honestly, for 300 yards, he was the Terminator. It was like, camera.
The way I looked at it, I'm suffering. I'm cussing him out, going, man, next time we train, fuck it. I'm not taking it easy. There's no, like, he's 40 pounds lighter or 100 pounds lighter. I'm going to mash him. And so I'm going up, and I'm struggling. I'm huffing, and I'm puffing, and I'm hurting. And when I see him, I'm like, fuck, he still has that camera. So all of a sudden, that's when I sucked it up. As soon as he passed me, I'm all...
It's good, man.
Dan's such a hippie that we went up to Mount Charleston one time, and he's like, you know, sometimes I sleep up here. And I was like, you know, you can afford rent, right? Like, you don't have to.
But hey, he doesn't drive a Prius.
No.
Yeah, oh. One of my favorite Dan Hardy stories. So he had, like, lost like two fights in a row. And when he loses, you don't see him. Like you don't see him at the gym. And his girlfriend came up to me and he goes, "You gotta talk to Dan for me." I go, "Why?" He goes, "All he does is keep eating Subway cookies." He won't stop eating.
Sound like me.
Yes, he said that you're addicted to Subway cookies other stuff, but I'm not going to mention that. But it was awesome. I'm so happy for you, man.
Thank you, man. Well, we were wrestling partners at Legends back in the day, like old 10th Planet when I was over to train with Eddie Bravo.
Yeah.
And we would wrestle every week on a Saturday.
Yeah.
And at one time he's like, "Oh, I've got a comedy show coming up." I'm like, "Oh, you're a comedian." I had no idea. This guy's dumping me on my head once a week, you know, throwing me around so he can wrestle and he makes people laugh. It was
oh, thanks, man. No, the funny part was he was like, he says to me, Dan literally had like no wrestling. Like he was brand new to wrestling.
Trust me, everybody here knows.
Just brand new. So he comes to practice, but what about Dan is like, he was like one of those guys that if like in jiu-jitsu I heard, if someone tapped him, he was like, "That's my new partner." He had no ego, which was like he was a sponge. But he goes to me, he goes, "I'm fighting GSP. I'm like, "Well, I'm fighting Chuck Liddell. Fuck it. If you're fucking fighting GSP." But I couldn't believe he went fucking fight. Like, that was one of my favorite fights ever, the versus GSP, because the heart, your arm was fucking bent. Like, it was more crooked than, like, my dick after jerking off 7 times in a row. It was unbelievable, man.
Thank you.
How hurt was your arm in that fight?
It wasn't. I was absolutely fine, honestly. I was expecting at least my shoulder to wait. The Kimura was a lot closer, if I'm honest. The armbar, I'm stubborn, and I was at Matt Serra's place for a couple of weeks.
You weren't at Matt Hughes' place.
I wasn't
you
at Matt Hughes'
place. I know you were not at Matt Hughes' place.
I've been working quite a bit with him recently. That's a whole other story. Anyway. Yeah. Yeah, so I've been at Matt Serra's, and he just drilled the hell out of that armbar escape over and over again. And when you go and train in Long Island, you don't get normal training partners. Everyone's got a nickname. So I've got He-Man, Bam Bam, and Monster. They were my 3 training partners, honestly. Everyone gets a nickname.
That was awesome, man.
Well, I've always told you, Dan, that I thought you gained more fans in that loss to GSP than probably a lot of your wins. Because, I mean, you know, it really personified the outlaw image. You know, I mean, it personified the guy who was not gonna tap, and I thought George did a, you know, gave you a lot of credit for that too. I mean, I can remember him saying, you know, in his mind he was thinking, "I'm gonna have to break this guy's arm." Like, I realized that, you know, we're gonna have to go full Frank. What was that? Flashback? Was that what happened?
No.
You said breaking arms, and he was like, "Oh, I do that."
Yeah, yeah.
Lack of killer instincts.
We
you
did a
think about it. If once you lock someone up, you apply it. It should break. If you have to think whether I have to do this or not, you're not the kind of guy that's going to do it.
Yeah. No, yeah. He was trying. I mean, if my arm would have snapped, he would have taken it with him for sure.
Yeah. It was fortuitous that we got to have Dan on with us tonight, because Frank and I have been talking, and Dan, we really have to thank you in a kind of a special way for
absolutely
making phone booth fighting happen, because, you know, I've been friends with Dan for years now, and Dan was always telling me that if I ever really hung out with Frank Mir, that we would be great friends. You tell me that all the time. And I, you know, knew Frank from around a press conference.
It was the vegan thing, right?
That's exactly what it was.
But it was so true, because it was like once we started talking, the podcast was really born out of just long conversations. Like, I guess we ought to start recording this, and maybe somebody will listen. And fortunately, at least
like
you guys,
like a death metal band, 20 mm-hmm years later.
Yeah. Well, yes, we do, kind of.
I think you're
right?
Talking to me in that group as well. Aren't
absolutely,
you? I've been
you're in that
thanks,
group
yeah,
as well.
Thanks, yeah. But it was because and that always stuck with me. And the more we've done this show, and the more it's taken off, So what was it that you? Because you knew both of us really well. Like, what made you think that when you were telling me that?
I don't know. There are just certain people that I meet that I have good conversations with. You know, and that's really all it is. If I meet two people and I have a good conversation, I try and connect them, because then they're going to have a good conversation. Then when I see either of you again, we're going to have another good conversation. I mean, we had some really fantastic
phenomenal
ones. You know, when the heart rate had come down and we'd managed to recover from those training sessions, you know, and always, he was always a great person to train with, apart from the fact that he would load himself down with weapons before he got to the gym. There was a Super Bowl. This is another true story. There's a Super Bowl, and he missed the first quarter. He came straight over to me. The first thing he said, "You'll never guess what happened last night. I had an opportunity to shoot someone. I didn't have my gun with me."
True story. Oh.
Never have it when you need it.
If I had a very nickel for every time that happened to me. What happened?
Yeah.
Long story.
I'll try. That's okay. We just started the show. We got plenty of time.
If anybody is aware of listening to me, I'm a little bit of a paranoid individual that makes sure that at any moment I'm able to take care of myself or my family.
No, I was calling you Tackleberry during our training session.
You were. And I'm also a fan of firearms. I like guns. I like knives.
Knife.
The more the merrier. And so, and then I go and train with them also. And so it was one night that my, all of a sudden I get a call from my neighbors across the street, good family, goes to bed at 9 o'clock at night, and it's 2:30 in the morning. And just before that, I heard some screaming outside, but the neighbors to my right have a 14-year-old daughter that has, you know, her girlfriend spend the night, and sometimes they're, you know, running around being crazy. So I'm up, the wife's asleep, I hear some screaming outside, it sounds like some girls, I'm like, nah. You know, teenagers being funny. So I go back to playing on the iPad and whatnot, and all of a sudden my wife's phone lights up, and it's our neighbor across the street, who normally would never call somebody at 2:30 in the morning. So then I wake my wife up. I'm like, hey, babe, you know, so-and-so across the street called your phone. She gets on the phone, realizes that someone had broken into their house. Looks like a sexual predator had tried to break in their window. And then when they came in, and the male individual that broke in saw her, she screamed because she thought it was just her kids.
Fucking John Jones.
Right? So she thought that her kids were up in the middle of the night. She gets out of bed, sees a young male that was up to no good. She starts screaming, which is a scream I heard. This guy decides to do a fun dive out the window, dives onto her car, smashes it, and runs off. And so then she calls us because, hey, you know, Metro's coming over to our house.
The neighbor's a lunatic. He's got loads of guns.
Right. We'll call so she calls us.
What do you need us for?
Can we send our kids over there?
Cops are like, do you have Frank Mir's number? Because he's.
No.
We usually just refer
so
people to him.
So when she says this, now we go, my wife and I put on a pair of sweatpants. We go downstairs. And I, being the psychopath I am, I have shutters throughout my house. You can't get into my house. All the windows have.
Those aren't just shutters. I've been in there during lockdown, like right before he goes to bed, and all of a sudden, it's like he flips a switch and you're
there. The storm shutters.
I'm like, what is that? And he's like,
out.
I'm securing the perimeter.
So as I'm opening up my shutters that keep people out, I see the lights of a police officer's car is outside. So I put on my sweatpants because I don't sleep with very many clothes on. And then I go to grab my firearm, and I'm like, eh, I'm 6'3". I have tattoos. Going out there with a police officer wearing a pair of sweatpants and a gun might not be the best situation, right? So all of a sudden, I put my firearm back up on the mantle, and I'm like, yeah, I'll just go out there. So I walk out there, and before that, I'd asked my wife. I'm like, hey, babe, you know, obviously there's some bad guys out and about. Did you lock your car? My wife's not the best at that. She's like, I don't know. I'm like, shit. So she goes outside. She goes to console her, you know, her friend across the street. Metro officers out there, you know, taking a report. I go over. Sure enough, my wife's car is not locked. So I go through. Nothing's taken out. I make sure the insurance papers are in there. I go through. My car is locked. And then I look over at my classic 1968 Mustang that stays over in the corner.
It's a beautiful car.
That has double limo tint windows. And I'm all, what are the chances, right? So all of a sudden I go and I reach over on the handle and I pull and the door's open to my surprise. And I open the door and I see a young male Hispanic kid that looks over at me, puts his hand on his waistband and goes. So then I look at him and go, nah. Shut the door. What am I to do? He has a gun? I don't. But then I realize, I'm like, if he comes out of the vehicle, I'm pretty dangerous within arm reach. If all of a sudden I get outside of arm reach, gun's probably going to beat my ass pretty good. So I walk to the edge of the car, and I'm like, all right, I don't want to walk away too far. If he opens the door, I can get him. And I look over, and the police officer, and I'm starting to do the whole waving thing, you know, like, hey, buddy, you know what I mean? Like, pay attention to me.
Over here.
I'm tattooed, half naked. Look at me. He's not paying attention, man. I'm like, man, this guy sucks at this job. And so then I look over, and my wife makes eye contact with me, and I'll, you know, somebody who's been married for over that time, 10-plus years, I'm like, I do that maneuver, and the wife realizes that there's something going on. So she tells the officer, hey, my husband won't leave by his vehicle, and there he's saying something. So sure enough, then that's when the police officer ran my way, and he goes, what's up? I'm like, hey, there's a guy in my car. We're not buddies. I don't know who he is. And you might want to find out, you know, who he is. And sure enough, he opens up, you know, he goes to the front of my car. The family runs in, and now I'm sitting there going, shit, she said there was two of them, because at the time we thought there was two guys. I'm like, I seen one. If something happens to this officer, I need to make sure I can get to my house so I can be of an asset to this situation. So I'm sitting there going, okay, do I run? Do I stay? Do I run? The wife walks in, and all of a sudden, you know, the guy's yelling at the guy, stop. And sure enough, the kid does the same thing to the officer, which luckily didn't cost him his life. Puts his hand in his waistband and flips the police officer off. The officer, for whatever reason, decided to go ahead and I don't see a gun yet, which some officers decide that that's not the priority. Didn't shoot him, and then decides to go ahead and just tase him instead until he sees a weapon. Pop, pop, tases him, and then it's just a funny story later. There was no other guy.
I just like the thought process of this aspiring criminal, that at the point where Frank opens the door, sees him, says, huh, closes the door, that this guy's thinking, I seem like a pretty cool guy. I think he's going to keep a secret, right? We had a moment.
I gave him that moment. We looked at each other, and he did the with his hand in his waistband, and I gave the Frank Mir face.
Yeah, Frank Mir faced it.
Shut the door for him very nicely and just walked to the rear of the car.
Wow. But, like, why, like, have you looked at yourself and realized, I don't need that many guns? Like, who's robbing you?
But that's the problem. If someone looks at me, I doubt they're going to look at me and go, fuck it, I'm going to beat his ass. Most people look at me and go, a stick or a gun might make this easier.
Yeah.
The scariest text to get from Frank, the irony is that sometimes when I go over to the house, he'll just, I'll knock on the door and, or ring the doorbell, and he'll just text and say, come on in, it's open. And let me tell you something, when I open that door, I'm like, Frank, I'm coming in the house. I am unarmed.
The funny part of that story is that I actually understand exactly how you feel, because I inherited a lot of my mindset from my father. So I remember coming home at 17 years of age, allowed to go out, didn't make before midnight. All of a sudden, the front door is locked. I remember coming through the window, saying the same exact thing, like, "Hey, Dad, it's me. Please, it's me." Because you know.
Wow, that's crazy. This is fucking. You guys are crazy.
So. All right, so, you know, we should probably, to be topical, because we had not planned on breaking any news tonight on the MMA Roasted Phone Booth Fighting Swap Cast. By the way, when are you starting a podcast? You need a podcast.
Funny you should mention that. Johnny G's, yeah, we've just started one. It's the podcast with no name right now. But it's just basically me and John drinking tea and having weird conversations.
Oh, wait, is John here? Where's John?
John's here.
Did you say
John Gooden
tea?
Is here, ladies and gentlemen. Dan Hardy's broadcast partner, the great John Gooden, and a fine, upstanding fellow vegan. Yes, sir. Yeah. That's great, man, because we were talking about that like 6 months ago.
All right, enough fighting. Let's talk about fighting.
Not the vegan part, the podcasting part. Okay, but I was telling him that you guys should totally do a podcast, so it's good. You're doing it. Cool. Well, we had not planned to break any news, but John Jones broke some news for us. So the word is he's off of UFC 200. It's official. An out-of-competition positive test from, what did it say, June 16th? I think was that right?
That's okay.
So don't know what it is yet, but it's all official. He's off the card. They're trying to find Daniel Cormier a new opponent, but don't know if that's going to happen on a few days' notice. What's everybody think, Adam?
I'm just like, what is? How many chances does this guy need? And I'm really happy because now I can get tickets. but I'm just, it's just really upsetting because I wanted to watch this fight. John Jones is, you know, such a blessed athlete. and he's, I think, the greatest fighter in the world, and he's just taking this gift that he has. And you can't tell me in 20 years he's not going to look back and be like, the fuck was I doing? I mean, you got a guy, he's on top of the world. And we've seen this before with other athletes. You've seen them with Dwight Gooden, Daryl Strawberry, Lawrence Taylor. How many great athletes have we seen in their prime just fuck it up? And it just sucks. Sucks for the fans. It sucks for kids. It sucks for John. It sucks for Daniel Cormier, because that's the one person he's lost to so far. And I would have liked to have seen Daniel win the belt, and I wanted to see the fight. And now he just robbed everybody a great time.
Yeah, and he's got to be kicking himself as well, because the last fight of John Jones, he was criticized quite a lot. And I think Cormier, you know, must have felt like that was his best opportunity to beat him as well. You know, to have not been there ready for that fight, that must really, really piss him off now.
I still want to see it come out, because already we've seen Yoel Romero, myself, people that have had metabolites come out, and necessarily PEDs not be what they think PEDs should be. And John, I mean, I've trained with the guy for a year over there in Albuquerque. If you said right now that he failed a recreational drug test, I'm going to keep my mouth shut. I'm just going to sit here and go, You know what I mean? Like, I mean, but as far as a performance-enhancing drug, we've had these discussions. Trust me, no one is more ignorant about performance-enhancing drugs than John. The guy has two brothers that are in the NFL. He has athletic ability up the ass.
Yeah.
The guy's an unbelievable athlete, unbelievable fighter. And so he doesn't take drugs when it's easy to pass drug tests before USADA. And now he's going to take drugs, performance-enhancing drugs.
Nobody's accused him of being in Mensa, you know? So,
no. But at the same time, as far as needing to go ahead and do performance-enhancing drugs, that ain't the guy. He's the guy who was on the opposite side of the spectrum going, hey, do you want to take some drugs that'll make you a better fighter? He's all, no, I want to take some drugs that make me feel better. Yeah. I'm going to party. It's like, that's the guy who's out kicking everybody's ass and winning world championships. At this point, if we can just get him to stop taking drugs recreationally, his performance-enhancing abilities are going to be through the roof. He's not going to need any extra edge. It's not like the guy's fucking pushing 40.
You think he's
not Dan Henderson. We're talking about a guy who's still 28 years old.
You think he's pissed right now that he didn't just take coke like last time? And
Well, that's my point. If we were talking about he failed the drug test because he was out partying, I'd be, oh, shit, man. Serious? But we're talking about, oh, he's taking drugs to make himself perform better. I'm like, really? This is a guy who was out partying at strip clubs, out doing whatever, and still beating the shit out of Daniel Cormier. Why? If he sobers up, he's going to fucking be above everybody else. I mean, this guy was out partying and pushing it and still the number one fighter in the world? Shit, if he's sober, he's fucking Superman.
It's unbelievable. Now, isn't there a video of you beating him up at a bar? Right? Didn't that happen?
No, it was just two friends playing grab ass. Just playing around. I know, they had a video that we were fighting. We didn't fight. We were just screwing around. Just like, I mean.
But you were beating his ass in that grab ass game.
At that moment, I was doing pretty well. But, I mean, there's other moments where not so much.
How do you think you would do against him in a fight?
Do I get to go ahead and be my weight and he gets to be his weight?
He goes up to heavyweight and fights you.
Well, I've been with John. John's not, he has a struggle with eating. So I don't ever see him being above 235. So that's always going to be a detriment. That's why, I mean, Dan's a phenomenal fighter, technically phenomenal. But if we go in the gym and spar, it's like, well, I still got 100 pounds on you. Yeah. There's that advantage of size.
Because people were saying, I'd heard that if Jones won this fight and Brock won his fight, they were going to match those two up. That's who people were talking about. I mean, do you see that ever happening, and who would win that fight?
Not really. I mean, I really think Brock hasn't fought in 5 years, and he's fighting a guy that hits extremely hard. The hardest fighter, and I've fought 27, how many times have you worked this out to?
It changes from 26 to 27. Sometimes you deduct a fight.
Yeah.
It just, yeah.
I've lost a few IQ points in some of those shots. And mostly probably to Mark Hunt, who out of all the guys I fought, hits the hardest. And I mean, I've been in there with Alistair Overeem. I've been in there with JDS and probably other people I can't remember at the moment.
Yeah, the 27th guy.
Yeah, some of those guys hit pretty hard. So now you have somebody who is kind of on the opposite end spectrum where I sit there and take shots I probably shouldn't. Brock Lesnar break dances to make sure he avoids shots that he doesn't want to take. So you have a guy who doesn't like to get hit fighting somebody who I think he has the record for the most first round knockouts in the UFC. The guy hits pretty hard. So seeing Brock break it through, I mean, he's a great wrestler, NCAA champ. Maybe he can pull it off. But I've brought that up before. If we were talking about who I think is probably one of the most skilled fighters to ever walk in the UFC, Anderson Silva. So Anderson Silva is a ninja. If I told you he took 5 years off and he's going to walk back in the octagon, we would all probably bring into discussion, like, man, 5 years? But Anderson Silva's had a ton of fights. Brock Lesnar's had less than 10 and took 5 years off. And now he's fighting Mark Hunt, who's had over 70 kickboxing matches, over 30 MMA matches. That's a lot of experience. And who, in the 42 years of age, in the last 3 years, has actually been improving.
Yeah.
That's a pretty far stretch. Anything can happen. It's MMA, 4 ounce gloves. We say that all the time. But as far as statistically, if I have to put my money on it, Brock becoming victorious, and I'm saying that even in contradiction to what my own benefit would be. It's better for me as Frank Mir if Brock Lesnar wins, because Frank Mir 3 versus Brock Lesnar 3 is a huge payday for me. I'm not betting on it when
that?
He's fighting Mark Hunt.
Now, how hard does Brock hit? Like, I mean, since you've been hit by him.
Brock punches okay. I mean, he hits hard, but I mean, heavyweight division, I wouldn't put him in the top five of the guys that I fought. But his grappling strength to hold you down and grab you, really high. One of the stronger guys I've ever grappled with.
I mean, because I see this fight, like you said, I see Brock going in for a double leg, Mark either catching with an uppercut or a knee, and this fight's over. But because it's such an easy fight for me to call, I'm like, it's like you ever meet a chick where she's like way too hot and she's asking you to fuck and you're like, she's got to have a dick. There's no way. There's no way. This girl.
That
something's up here. You know.
If Brock is able to land a double, then I think he'll be successful because he can take Mark down, wear him out. Maybe the round goes to the second round. He's tired. But the problem is Mark Hunt's not the easiest guy. I mean, you're a high-level wrestler, right? If you look at Mark Hunt, right, and your guy is the heavyweight, would you sit there and go, hey, this short, thick Samoan kid, blast him with a double?
No.
Right?
I would think
you're going to say grab him in a single,
right?
Which is the same thing he did to Alistair Overeem. If you watch the Alistair Overeem, he decided, man, Alistair's a pretty strong guy at that time. He was a little bigger than he is now. He decided to go ahead and not shoot a double. He shot a single, picks his leg up, and Alistair hits him with a couple uppercuts. And all of a sudden he goes, hey, this single kind of sucks. I'm going to let it go, and then ends up losing. Let me just say, as somebody who's fought Alistair and fought Mark Hunt, if you thought Alistair's uppercut sucked, you're really not going to like Mark Hunt's uppercuts.
But now I heard from someone told me that Hunt might have been hurt, might be hurt right now.
Well, I mean, that goes in. I mean, if someone's injured, that's the monkey, you know.
He's old, though, right? I mean, we're all injured. Are we not?
We're all injured, and, you know.
I'm 34, and I'm beat up. I don't know about you.
Funny enough, though, you, years ago, Dan tried to get me into yoga. So I tried to go into yoga. My wife is big into me going to yoga. So I go to yoga, sit there. I go in the classroom, and there's something about me being a world champion, fighter, alpha male of alpha males, struggling to do something that a woman who's a soccer mom who just gave birth to her last baby 6 months ago is pulling off, and I can't. A little bit hard on the ego.
Yeah.
But so lately, I hooked up with a Diamond Dallas Page. He has a website out, and so I've been doing his yoga on my house. So he has a whole website you can click on to pick out these programs. So after I go in the morning and lift weights, today I took the kids to the UFC gym over on Craig. I'm showing them, we're going through the guillotine, different variations of it. Angelo Reyes, my boxing coach, I box with him. So then I get home, like, hey, I'm going to do some yoga. So I click it on. But I came home from the gym, and, you know, I'm sweaty. You are from practice, right? So I take off all my sweaty clothes. So now at this point, I got tape on my feet, and that's all I have. And so I decide that, you know, appropriate time to put on the yoga. I'm in my bedroom. What better time to be naked doing yoga than in your room, right? But the only problem with that I've realized is that you need to make sure that your wife doesn't have any friends.
Oh, no.
Coming over, because they're going to meet up like women do and jump in the car with you to go there. So now I'm doing a yoga position, and I'm kind of done. I'm looking up, and hold on. Liz, are you still here? Liz is there. So I'm naked. I'm just touching my toes, and then I look over.
Hang on. You were touching your toes?
I was touching my toes.
Really?
Oh, easily. Yeah,
knees
yeah,
bent no over.
You train with me. I'm super flexible. Yeah. Dieting, not so much. Flexibility, very good. And so... So my first Diamond Dallas Page yoga story is that my wife's friend walks in me naked doing yoga.
Wow.
This guy, you know Diamond Dallas Page, right?
I actually think every time I go through airport security, they go like this, I yell out DDP.
And then, there you go.
So if anybody...
And if you feel nude there, know how I felt.
So Dallas Page, who was like a famous pro wrestler, retired from wrestling, and he started a yoga brand, right? He's got an app, DDP Yoga and everything. So we had him on the show last week, if anybody heard that episode. And yeah, thank you. The interesting thing was like... He was super animated on the air, but you're thinking, you know, pro wrestling, you know, that's their bit, right? And he was super animated talking about the yoga. But when I realized it was him, is Frank and I got on the phone with him yesterday, and that call was that not like
same
a high
thing.
Energy? Listen, bro, all right. I've been watching you downloading he's monitoring Frank, like what he's downloading, like from his house in Atlanta. He's like, I see you're doing my Diamond Dozen, which is great. I want you to start with that. But then what I want you to do is I want you to come to Atlanta. I want you to train with me. Serious shit, bro. Serious shit, right?
And no, very much like, so. So much that I was in my room naked, inspired to yes. go ahead and train you more yoga.
Because he knew that... Dallas Page was logged into the account.
I was worried about that.
He
I'm
was
like,
working,
man, it's been
right?
a day. I got to make sure he's paying attention
yeah.
that I'm hitting up the yoga.
Now, Dan, I've always wanted to know. So I watched your countdown special where you were going to be a Shaolin monk. And you lived amongst the monks for a little bit. Did you ever think, what if I just became a monk? Like, how does that ever cross your mind?
Oh, yeah. My plan was to go back. I was going to go back and stay. Like, don't have to think about paying bills.
Are monks allowed to have women?
No.
Then you never do it.
That's why he's still here.
Nope.
Well, yeah, that's a good point. That's good.
But you know, that's amazing, though. You were going to be a monk. I picture you like, remember Ace Ventura 2? In like the beginning?
When, this is a lovely room of death.
Yeah, like right? And they wanted to get him out of the fucking monastery. I somehow picture you as that like...
Yeah. But Dan, it's crazy. You know what's funny? I had hair. I had longer hair than you when I got out there. Seriously, that was long hair.
Yeah.
And yeah.
How long were you a monk for?
Oh, it was just 2 months. I was there for 2 months training. Yeah. But honestly, you know, I say 2 months. It felt like a lifetime because it was 5 o'clock in the morning training. We did 10, 12 hours a day.
You did like monk karate and stuff?
All of it. The weapons and everything.
But Dan's good at when he tells a story. You're like enveloped. Yeah. I mean, when he comes in there and he tells, I mean, he had me for a while, like, now I'm a Raiders fan because this guy wearing Raiders hat telling me about the guys that what they do back in the 80s and everything. And then I, to the point to where like I went to my wife afterwards, I'm like, hey, I think we need to go to Peru. She's all, you're not
yeah,
gonna do the Peru thing from, and then we had to watch the Netflix video of people doing it. I'm like, nah, I mean, Dan did it. And the way he explained it, I'm ready to go ahead and take a trip.
Hey, now, do you guys know what he's talking about? Dan's ayahuasca odyssey. Does everybody know this story from a few years ago? Okay, so how many years now? 3 or 4?
I don't know. I've just got back from a second trip.
The first one was
probably 3 or 4 years ago, though, right?
Yeah, that's what I mean. When
right
you first
after
did
146.
It. Okay. Right.
Honestly, we did 146 on the Saturday night. I went to see Van Halen on the Sunday night at the MGM Grand.
And you were gone for Peru for 2 weeks, right?
And, yeah, Monday.
So
I
remember you had to do the nicotine. The tobacco
cleanse,
and then
yeah, it was awful.
Did your grandma know about this?
Oh yeah, she's all about
Dan's grandma follows me on Twitter, right?
Hang on, no, you're laughing. She probably followed all of you on Twitter.
Because I tweeted, hey, he was doing a really, your first time broadcasting. I go, Dan, you did a great job. I think you're really good at this. And then I get, damn right he is. That's my grandson, right? Yeah. And I was like, who's this troll like pretending to be Dan Hardy's grandma? I looked at the pictures. It was really your grandma.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, she used to come to all my old events. In fact, I have one memory of her outside of an ice rink climbing a fence to cut down a poster that I was on. And a few weeks later, we've got the poster up on the wall. I mean, I'm talking about a poster. It's a banner. This banner goes all the way down the length of the gym. The promoter walks in and said, oh, I wonder where that went. Okay. How do you blame your grandma for that? You know?
Dan does have, like, the world's most supportive family. Because do you guys know the story of, if you listen to the show, you know my dog Mel that was rescued from Michael Vick's dogfighting ring and all that? Dan has been very supportive, and he did a fundraiser for the sanctuary that rescued Mel, and he went with me to the reunion we did a couple years ago with the Vick dogs. Anyway, I was on Twitter one day and getting into it with, like, Vick fans, and then Vick himself gets looped into these tweets and everything, right? So it's this kind of, you know, trash talking back and forth, you know, fuck this guy. And all of a sudden I look and Dan's dad has jumped into it, and he's like at Mike Vick, I'll fight you anytime, you sorry son. You know, he's like doing his trash talking, man. That was awesome. So about the ayahuasca though, because I remember when you did something I never thought about. Like, you told me you came back and the spirit animal and all that kind of stuff. But on your Twitter profile still is a picture of you over there, right? Okay. I was thinking just the other day, I've looked at that profile pic a million times, but for the first time the other day, I was thinking, was someone there lucid enough to take a quality photo? Or do they have like an official photographer? Is it like the roller coaster at Disneyland, you know, where they sell you the photo when you get off and everybody's like, I got that look? How did you get this?
No, I actually, that was the closing ceremony of the stay. I was there for 2 weeks, and at the end of the ceremony, we sat in it was called a malacca, it's the ceremonial building. We sit there with the shaman, and he does like a tobacco cleanse to bless us at the end of the stay. So that's what that was.
And they just find like the most together guy to run the camera?
No, I actually had a friend with me who was a professional photographer. It just kind of worked out perfectly. Yeah.
Okay, I got it.
Now, Frank, you've made huge news this week. You've asked the UFC for your release. Have you heard from Dana, Lorenzo? Anybody contact you?
No, I've had about as much conversations with them as I've had since the first time the release of me being accused of the metabolite came about. So basically me asking for a release is just kind of to try to push the hand of saying, hey, I need to talk to somebody. You know, most people when they get in trouble at work, their boss is going to have someone sitting to speak to them. So far I've only had discussions with underlings. I'm very much buying to be able to have a conversation with the bosses themselves.
Now, if they give you a release, would you be able to fight for Bellator or one of the other organizations?
Absolutely. I mean, as soon as I get a release, my suspension is only with the UFC, who USADA has control over. I have no suspension from an athletic commission in the U.S. I could fight overseas, Fedor, that kind of fight. All those opportunities.
Ooh, shots fired.
Much, very much, again, besides the... I've already stated that a silver lining to my whole situation is that I would be able to finally broadcast, be able to do color commentating, which I did up until 2011 with the WEC, that I very much love to do, and I keep asking to do again. For whatever reason, Stan and Kenny are always in the rotation, and I'm not. And so, I keep being told every time I've renewed my contract, yeah, we'll get you in there. And
how's your British accent? Maybe John and Dan need a third guy in the booth.
Yeah, so well, no, Dan does a great job.
So everyone here, tweet, give Frank Mir a commentating contract and put a Dana White.
No, that's something I really much would love to do. Lorenzo. I feel like I'm able to. Yeah. It's funny because I'll have fans come up to me and think that I don't do that because I choose not to. I'm like, not really. I'm kind of like that girl that just doesn't get a date and I get stayed at home. It's not because I don't want to. It's like no one's asking me.
You when you were WEC, I thought you were great. I thought you were perfect, honestly. Like you, it was great. You broke down those fights. There was never, whenever there's a commentator, sometimes you'll roll your eyes like, the fuck's this guy talking about? But that was never, I never had a case with you doing that. For
thank
real.
You. Yeah, no, and I very much love to do that, and I took great pride in it, and it got me by the cage. And it's something I very much enjoy to do. So maybe that's something I can do outside the UFC is finally have the opportunity to color commentate again. On top of that, I've kind of fought through my whole life as a heavyweight. Much to my wife's dismay, I don't ever say no to the worst fights out there. They say, hey, do you want to fight this guy? I'm like, absolutely. My wife's like, hey, didn't they offer you so-and-so? I'm like, yeah, but that guy sucks. Let's fight that killer. And so I fought Nogueira, I fought Mirko Krokop, I fought Brock Lesnar, I fought Alistair Overeem, you name it, JDS. I've always said, yes, let's walk in there and see what I'm made out of, and that's who I'm going to be. I don't want to ever sit and cower and pick my fights. And so the one guy that I've never fought and never been able to have the opportunity to fight is Fedor. So if I retire and I fight Fedor, I can say I fought every one of the best heavyweights that ever existed during my era.
You got to fight Fedor, and you got to do it in that EFN organization.
With the commentator?
That they had Borat as the commentator.
Did you guys watch that stream? That guy was the funniest commentator ever.
My favorite line is, that was almost fantastic. I'm stealing that one. Make a note of that
one. He goes, he should not be proud of himself for that fight. He goes, they're going to announce Fedor as the winner, but he really didn't win. I was like, it was almost like they go, you, section 342, get over here. Come on down. Okay, but I would love to see your intros. So they had like a flying lady.
It was like Cirque du Soleil. It was ridiculous. Yeah. It was like car.
It was unbelievable. Yeah. It was how much money do you think they spent on that? They must have spent.
I don't know. Not as much as they paid Maldonado.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was ridiculous.
But I mean, honestly, that's still my goal. I mean, I've gotten to fight Andre Arlovski. I mean, you name it. Regardless of I'm happy with how the outcome worked out, I've been able to go in there and face. And you understand that as a fighter, you want to go out there. You never want to have that guy that you missed out on.
But you're an old school fighter because I think that's you're part of the old school. And Dan, you were there. But there's a whole new crop of fighters who go, I'm going to fight whoever's going to get me to the title, taking the least amount of damage in the safest fights possible. And I've had fighters tell me that, too. And I'm like, hey, that's your road to the title. Go right ahead.
And that's because nowadays, because there's a financial advantage. I mean, my first professional fight, I lost money on. I think I made $300. That's what they wrote me the check. And I had a $500 travel expense, not counting the hotel room.
Sounds like comedy.
Right. So,
as I was gonna say, it sounds
so like
the
guys
brothel.
Like Dan and I, when we first fought, it's because I wanted to fight people. The fact that we made money at it was like, holy shit, I get to do what I love and you're going to pay me. And then when I got to the UFC and they decided to pay me enough money that I can look at my wife and go, so I can go to the gym now and spend my whole day there and you're not going to bid. Yeah, no problem. So I'm gone. Yeah. That to me was a beautiful proposition. I think nowadays guys look at fighting and they get into it. Some of the younger guys, they've watched the tough shows, and that's, you know, just, hey, that's the way it is now. They look at it as a business. To me, I always left that up to my manager, to the wife. Like, you can look at the business aspect of it. I want to go out and fight the toughest guys in the world.
But what do you look like? A guy like Tyron Woodley, right? Obviously a very tough guy, great athlete.
Yeah, great martial
arts. Told me, I'm going to do whatever it takes to do the least amount of fights to a title shot, and it worked for him.
Well, I think he's.
But that's money. That's not a fighter, man. That's not Dan. That's not me. I've seen you in the gym. This guy, we're not those guys. That's just not who we are. And maybe the detriment to our bank account, but that's not what makes me sleep at night. You know, like I can't sit there and go, well, I took an easier path, but I'm financially great. It's like I battle that because I have kids and I get that. And I understand it, but that's not what makes me me. And I know that doesn't make him who he is. He's always going to choose the most difficult battles out there. I mean, how many guys go out there with how many losses did we have in the row at the time? Three or four? Four.
Yeah.
And go out there and still say, screw it. I'm going to battle. I'm going to fight. I don't care if I win or lose. Most human beings, in the face of that kind of adversity, they die.
My favorite is that he calls out hunters. He's like, fuck, Matt Hughes, you kill animals? Let's go right now. Matt Hughes has been retired for 3 years at this point, but he's like, fuck it, we're fighting.
I just wait till he's old. I wait till he's old, and then I'll call him out.
That was one of my favorite. Now, by the way, tomorrow night, Roy Nelson, Black Beast, who do you have?
Oh, Nelson. I think that Roy, honestly, I mean, Roy is good at a very select skill. I think that he'll stay
eating?
Safe. No, I said good, not great.
Oh, sorry.
I think he'll keep his left hand real high, right? We've both trained with him. Dan.
I cornered Roy against you.
You did.
I still feel bad for that.
Nah, honestly. Come on, man.
Don't feel too bad. Frank won.
That's true. That's true.
The fact that you helped him with his wrestling.
Yeah, I was Roy Nelson's.
I appreciate it.
I heard he asked you for a menu in between rounds. Is that true? He
was like, No.
Worse than that. Okay, as bad as Dan felt in that. Do you know James, right?
Yeah.
That was one of my groomsmen in my wedding.
Oh, no.
So I had to look across at you, but a groomsman in my wedding was cornering a guy to beat my ass and take money from me.
Wow. That's crazy.
That's rough. You
know, but you're picking the Black Beast tomorrow.
I think this is the end of Roy Nelson, honestly.
Really?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I think the Octagon collapsed.
Didn't you live in his house?
Itself. No.
Oh.
We did work together for a long while. Yeah.
But no, I heard he made a gym in his kitchen. Is that true?
No, he just never left his kitchen, so we had to move all the gym stuff in there. No,
you know,
true story. He has a binder in his car with printouts of all the menus of the fast food restaurants in the area.
Shut up.
You think I'm joking? I'm not joking. This is when I first moved to Vegas and I thought, something's not right about this guy. I should have noticed, but something's not... Honestly, so he gets in the car after training. He's like, okay, what's for... Because he goes, okay, a muscle milk's 500 calories. A cheeseburger's 500 calories. It's calories. There's no difference between the two. I'll just go with which one tastes
the best. I have heard him talk about this. He's not playing around. One time we were talking and I was like, yeah, man, I have a problem, you know, like eating food, this and that. And he's all... So you're going to drink that protein shake? I'm like, yeah, I'm going to go get that. He goes, 7-Eleven, Slim Jim, 15 grams of protein. I'm all, I don't know, man. That doesn't seem like it makes sense, but I want to believe in you, bro. Seriously, if anybody wants to believe in it, it's me.
You know, speaking of food in this matchup, one of the real, I don't know why this always sticks in my mind, but one of the real casualties of the Reebok era was the Black Beast's old sponsor that he had for his first couple of fights. He just, you know, he had no sponsors, but across that giant ass of his, it just said, Mike's Seafood. And I always thought to myself, this has to be someplace back in Louisiana that, you know, basically trades him like a couple of, you know, surf and turf platters or something to get that that logo on there. But this, I was telling Frank the other night on our Phone Booth Fighting podcast that visually this fight between Roy Nelson and Derek Lewis looks like a misunderstanding between neighbors. Right?
This is like, do you remember the old Super Brawl in Hawaii? Ensign Inoue, you can used to fight on this.
Yeah.
I used to love this show because they would have top contenders. They would have John Alessio, old school Vegas guy, John Alessio fighting Egan Inoue, and the next fight on the card were two guys that were arguing about a lawnmower. It was like, honestly, this was like the Hawaiian equivalent of like the Jerry Springer show.
Yeah.
You know? It was well, you can come and have a professional MMA bout if you're an athlete, but if you don't like your neighbor, you can also settle a dispute.
Celebrity boxing, I swear to God, yesterday I was looking at celebrity boxing. It said Uber versus Lyft driver. That was an actual fight. Now, but you think Black Beast is really going to end them? How?
I don't know. I think Roy, he's limited himself so much over the years. He's neglected all the other things that he could do and relies on that big power punch because it's the most economical thing that he can do in a fight. He can kind of plod forward and keep pitching that over the top. Whereas if he has to try and wrestle someone to the ground and use his ground game, that's a massive amount of effort that he has to put in. And if he gets Derek Lewis down to the floor and he pops straight back up again, then he's exhausted. And now he's got to keep his hands up as that monster's trying to knock him out.
Remember on The Ultimate Fighter, he kept getting people in that crucifix?
Yeah.
But
he beat Kimbo.
He like went away from that. It seemed like that was like a... that was like one of those moves, like you're playing Mike Tyson's Punch Out or something, and like everyone, don't fall for the fucking crucifix. Like that was a great move for him.
You know, I always want to bring this up to at the expo when you see the Jesus didn't tap people. You know, I always want to say that may be true, but he sure couldn't defend the crucifix.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, tested well in front of this audience.
Very true.
Next time I do a guest set with you.
Very true, very true.
It's happening on stage.
So, Edgar Aldo, who do you have in that?
It's difficult for me to pick either guy because I'm a fan of both, and I always learn so much when I watch both guys. I think Aldo's a scary, scary motherfucker right now, honestly. I think that this is the most motivated Aldo we'll ever see. You know, to be unbeaten in over a decade and then to lose in 13 seconds to a guy that you hate more than anybody else you've ever fought in your career is a massive motivating factor. Plus, you've got to think how the gym would have rallied around him, because every single one of those guys in that gym also wants to fight Conor McGregor. And I can tell you that from a fact, because I was there during his training camp. Every single one of those guys would fight him, every weight class. Claudia Gadelha would fight Conor McGregor if she got a chance.
Yeah. And
she's got a damn good chance, honestly. I think she's scary. But I just think Aldo is going to be the best version we've ever seen of him. And I'm not saying he's got much more than two or three fights left in his body, but I think the next two fights we're going to see are going to be his best.
Frank?
I'm actually pulling for Edgar. I think Frankie Edgar, honestly, is one of the best fighters in the world, pound for pound. If I had to right now, my kids are interested in MMA. Whenever they ask how to do something, I put in a Frankie Edgar tape. That's the way to do it. I think that the opposite of a little bit of what Dan thinks, because I wonder, I've seen Frankie Edgar face adversity, get beat, and how he rises to the occasion. He's a warrior. Jose Aldo, not negative or positive, I haven't seen how he rises to the occasion, because he's slaughtered everybody for many years. That's why going into that Conor McGregor fight, I took Jose Aldo, as the favor. A guy gets knocked out in 13 seconds, that does something to your psyche. To a guy who's never even been really rocked before, a guy who's just massacred people. I mean, you're not talking about just normal people, but like a Mendez, a Faber, just destroying guy after guy. Then when I watched the fight with Edgar and Aldo before, honestly, maybe the first round I gave to Aldo, but then after that, Edgar took on. And it looked like, honestly, if any but decision to the judges went in Jose Aldo's favor, it's like, well, one more round, Frankie Edgar definitely wins this fight. And now we get to start over at round six. And that's what we're going to see on Saturday. And I see a guy who's even more confident in himself and what his abilities are. And Frankie Edgar, I mean, we just watched him. I mean, who would have thought Chad Mendes gets knocked out that way? Get destroyed. So now you have a guy who has superior wrestling, and if he catches you on the chin, puts you out, I have to go with Frankie Edgar.
Mm. Oh, and while we're on the subject of this weight class, I was watching Gray Maynard train at Extreme Couture last night.
How's he look?
He looks amazing.
That's awesome.
He
I'm
is
glad.
Shredded. He's moving really well. He's working with Jimmy Gifford, so
and
he's
45.
Awesome.
He's going to be okay with.
He looks amazing. He's pretty close to his weight right now already.
That's
honestly,
spectacular.
I'm
that's
really
somebody that I grew up in high school. Actually wrestling with here in Vegas.
Right, right.
So the fact that he's doing well, he has kids. Yeah. I was a little worried about him because when people were talking about some of the contact, mm-hmm. I mean, let's face it, that last fight, he's getting hit with people that normally don't knock people out like that. The fact you're saying he's doing well actually makes me feel more confident.
Yeah.
I didn't want to be one of those guys like everybody else that says, hey, maybe he should hang it up.
I would love to see him back in the mix. I certainly think he's got the skills.
Well, I mean, that Frankie Edgar Maynard fight, me, is a trilogy. The first fight, maybe not obviously on its own, but second, third fight has to go down as one of the greatest trilogies of all time.
We were talking on the show this week that to me, that trilogy is like MMA's version of Gotti Ward, like what boxing has. With those three. So here's what we're going to do, guys. We want to get some questions from you guys. If you guys got questions, you want to ask some questions? Is everybody doing okay? Is everybody having a good time? Okay.
Actually, good. You know what? Before we get started, something I've been wanting to ask you. I spoke about it on our show before. Do you remember, I think it was International Fight Week, the second year around, you and I were at the table sitting down in the green room or back room trying to eat, and John came in and started describing his squirrel hunting experience.
John Jones? Wait, this was John Jones?
Almost sounds like
John
a euphemism Jones. For something else now.
No. Do you remember the situation? So I always tell the story about, as far as when people tell stories of an awkward moment, that probably ranks my highest, most awkward moment, because here, very good friends with you, I'm good friends with John, and two different people, and John decides to tell a story. Well, go ahead. Well, I'll start off, and then you can tell your version of it. Obviously, Dan, everybody knows his output on poaching and how he feels about that. And not that you're against hunting, if you're going to eat what you kill, not that you do that.
Which is why Kim Winslow eats boners, by the way.
Right. So knowing this, we're sitting there and John Jones comes down and he decides to start telling me a story about his last hunting expedition. So I think he's going to take down a deer, which he's like, yeah, I'm out deer hunting, this and that. And so we're up in the stand and hours go by, which if anybody hunts realizes that possibly could happen. You just, you know, you tried to bring in the deer. You thought you had a good spot. It didn't happen. And so he's like, you know, screw it. I'm going to shoot something. And I'm like, oh, man, this story just took a turn for the worst.
Oh, no.
So he says, I look over and I see a squirrel. And as he says this, I look over and there's Dan. I'm like, oh, no. I'm looking at John and I'm trying to do the... And John is not getting any of the signals right. of me going, yeah, you might want to
usually
go.
When you're on coke, you don't realize what's going on.
So then John describes how he looks over and he sees a squirrel and the guy goes, well, if you pull the trigger, you know, the deer hunting is done for the day, but well, we don't see any deer anyways. So John goes, well, so I say, screw it. I look over the deer. I aim in. I pull the trigger. I shoot the squirrel. And I'm like, oh, fuck, please let us say it just died. It just died. He goes, and then I felt bad because the squirrel grabs its chest,
aww.
Puts one arm up, and then another squirrel runs over by it. And I'm like looking at him. I'm like, oh, my God, what are you doing right now? I've, like, for the last couple of weeks, have been telling Dan that you're a good dude. Like, what are you doing?
So Dan, what did you say to him?
I'm in the back switching the piss tests around.
What were you thinking? Because I remember I'm seeing John say this, and I'm like doing the, please stop, please, just muskrat, don't shoot it, just hear what I'm saying. And then I look over, and Dan is fuming.
Yeah, it's just, you never know how you're going to deal with someone who is, you know, I mean, you look at him as a fighter, same as Matt Hughes, you know, I've always respected him as a fighter, I always learned a lot. But then when you meet someone, you find out that a bit more about them, and they're not the person that you hoped they would be. It kind of happened, and a part of me lost respect for John Jones on that day. I mean, you know, and Johnny G's here, John Gooden, and he's the bloody vegan, he's the hardcore vegan, and he kind of puts me to shame, and I eat eggs occasionally and that kind of thing, but we share similar opinions on things, but we differ slightly in other areas. The whole hunting thing, if you're going to hunt to eat, that's one thing. If you're hunting for entertainment, and if you shoot, oh, hang on.
Yeah, no, Johnny G won't even eat pussy. That's how bad.
All right, now this is where it's great to be my friend, okay? Because I don't. Here you go.
No, Dan, I don't
drink, my friend.
No, finish the story about the what you were saying about it's okay to eat with your hunt.
I've been hitting the head a lot. I've already forgotten.
Oh, okay.
What are we talking about?
No, I was just going to say this is part where somebody gets to take my alcohol.
You didn't know that? I'll attest for that because.
You look like.
Thanks for listening to the podcast, Adam. No. I've been hyping up MMA Roast.
You are so funny, man. When I think of you, I think of like just a. Fucking rocker who like.
Oh my God! You haven't listened at all.
No, I do listen. No, look. The guy found Lamar Odom fucking coked out in the bunny ranch. He's not that much of a.
No,
saint,
the guy works at a bunny ranch and doesn't do anything. Dude works and you name it. You talk about the difference. I mean, we actually had this conversation the other day. We walk into it was right after I was in the Hall of Fame. So we go to the Hall of Fame. I get inducted. I'm the only UFC fighter, MMA fighter, to be inducted into the Nevada Hall of Fame. So I'm celebrating afterwards. We go grab a... I'm like, thank you. So I will drink on, you know, when the occasions rise, but I don't have beer in the house. If you come to my house...
Go on.
Oh, I just got... This is our trip to the liquor store
story.
Is that what you're telling?
Is it a failed test? I mean, did it taste tainted?
No, I think I'm okay, hopefully. We'll see. Well, I'm screwed anyway, so.
It tastes like kangaroo meat.
It isn't like if you go to my house,
yeah.
You're going to find, if you say, hey, can I have a beer? I'm like, oh, really? I mean, no, juice, milk. I mean, I have a Diet Coke. I hid out in the outside fridge because the wife's against Diet Coke, you know? It's bad for you. And so to celebrate afterwards, I go home. I want my kids there and stuff. I'm like, oh, we'll run to the liquor store, and we go in there. And so I'm thinking I'm going to be funny going, hey, so. Straight edge boy. How many times have you been to a liquor store? He's all, my grandfather owned a liquor store and I grew up in one. I'm like, so wait a minute. You grew up in a liquor store. You became in a rock band at 16 years of age. You were a comedian, which you can attest to, probably not the cleanest lifestyle in the world.
Oh,
you
know? Yeah, no.
Right?
Absolutely.
Now the mofo actually works at a brothel. So I'm like, so you pretty much... partake or indulge or work or are surrounded with the most darkest sides of humanity. Drugs, sex, alcohol, you name it, and you stay straight edge.
It's crazy.
Right, I mean, that blows my mind.
If you don't know, guys, he's the one who found Lamar Odom passed out in the brothel. And I had wished that Lamar...
Saved his life. Turned him on his side, made him...
But it would have been great if Lamar...
Lamar Odom would have went down as dead be with two or three.
It would have been great if Lamar
hookers.
Would have opened his eyes and saw him and be like, oh, my God, I woke up in 1984.
That is awesome.
I actually, to touch on the MMA, when I did find him, I used a little blue belt jujitsu because he's like a 300-pound giant, so I had
Should I explain this to Dan? No.
So I had him in S mount until the paramedics could get there, right? So I mean, he was primed for an arm bar, but I think it's unethical to arm bar the unconscious. So I just kept him on his side so he wouldn't aspirate.
First guy you ever put to sleep doing jiu-jitsu.
It don't count when he's already asleep, man.
We went. This is how naive I am to like the vices of the world. We went to this liquor store run. Frank and I were talking. It was just the two of us because the party's
awesome.
Going on at your house, right?
Hold on, Dan will probably be just as shocked.
Okay. All right. So is this the cooler?
The cooler. Everybody knows that a cooler. Oh, hold on. When you go to the wine and what was the name of the store we went to?
I don't know. You were the regular there. We walked in. Hey, Frank.
So, anyways, we go there, go buy, bought the beers, the Trappist, the Rochford that I'm a fan of. So we walk over, and obviously because they've been sitting out, I want to make them cool. So they have most people to go to a BevMo or whatnot, better wine or liquor. They have these coolers where you can stick the beer in, and the water is circulating around, and it cools the beer down at a rapid pace. And I swear, we had to call the manager over because Richard wanted to know when they started these. What?
He
was
completely
like just sitting there. Like, it was like I brought a caveman in and showed him a camera. It was just like,
I was like, look at this thing.
This is phenomenal. When did they invent? He actually said, when did they invent this?
And the manager was like, we've had these like 10 years, honey.
They came out in 1985.
Yeah, right, yeah. All right.
Did not happen to your grandpa's spot, I guess.
No, I didn't. It did. That technology post-dated him. Okay, so here's what we're going to do, guys. If you've got questions, George and Ghost from MMA Junkie are here. We've got a microphone right here, and we're going to have you guys step up to the microphone, and George and Ghost can find you. If you got a question, get you over to the mic and do that. While we're organizing that, while you're getting your questions together, I did tease this on the Phone Booth Fighting podcast the other night. Frank, we get one of the nicest compliments, and if anybody in this room is one of the people that paid it to us, we really appreciate it. You know, we do talk a lot of MMA, but Frank and I get in some of these deep late night discussions and stuff like that, and it's always nice to hear people say, oh, yeah, I really dig it when you guys do that. But I said, okay, well, we're going to be like the NPR of MMA podcasts, then we're going to have to bring on our British news correspondent, Dan the Outlaw Hardy, to explain Brexit. So what can you tell us?
He failed a drug test and they took him off the card. I voted Remain. I don't know the result of the referendum so far, but yeah. As far as I know, he's not fighting still.
Now, are you going to be able to stay there? Right? Wait, you're for it? You wanted to stay?
I wanted to stay.
Yeah, you're probably the stay movement, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So is it done, in fact? Is that going to happen? Will it affect you? Will you have to move?
No, I'm good.
You get to stay where you are.
I have the British passport, so.
I mean, you're a British citizen.
I am, yeah. Well,
Do you have dual citizenship?
No, I don't, no.
That's why when you came over, I had to hide the shotgun at your house.
That's exactly it.
Okay,
yeah.
I get it. Now it's making sense why you wanted the unregistered gun. Sorry.
I think, personally, my opinion was that we should have stayed. But
yeah,
everybody has different life experiences, different perspectives are influenced by different things. There was a lot of propaganda in the news. I can't even begin to tell you how much propaganda there was.
And you're under 60.
And I'm under 60, yeah. There was a lot of very skewed opinions and a lot of people that clung to one small part of the bigger picture and made it all about that.
It was all basically, though, that was the baby boomers and basically immigration. I thought was
it's
the
like
biggest.
An immigration yeah. scare too.
But I mean really honestly, how much is it going to stop immigration?
It's not.
I mean, the employee people that are employed right now and people that are in England or in Britain, they're not kicking them out. They're saying, "Hey, well, you can stay, but we're going to stop anybody new yeah. from coming over." So what difference did it really make besides now every business owner that does business across borders is going to have to pay an inordinate amount of taxes?
Yeah. That's it. It's really going to affect everybody in a negative way. I mean, the only way that it's going to affect immigration in what they would consider a positive way is when the pound crashes and they realize that
it's crashing. I mean, we saw.
Yeah, of course.
Isn't it the lowest it's been in 35
years?
Years?
Yeah.
30
yeah.
years.
Lower than yeah. John Dodson.
First up, the guy in the Korean Zombie. I hope your question was not a Brexit question, sir. In the Korean Zombie t-shirt.
That is a nice t-shirt. I never got one of those. Carry on.
Is this mic hot? Do we can we no, just get not. The okay? Hang on one second. If we just get the mic over here to the side.
Go 1-2-1-2.
1-2-1-2.
Not yet.
No.
1-2-1-2.
He's working on it. It's okay. We'll get it here in just a second. Hold on, kind sir.
Now you feel like a pad holder.
Yeah.
Check.
Not quite yet.
Check.
Okay. I tell you what. Just say your question. I'll repeat it. Oh, there you go. We got Dan's mic. Okay.
All right. This is John from Las Vegas.
Hi, John.
Yeah. So my question is for Dan Hardy. It looks like you're in fight shape, so I'm wondering if you've been training at all and any possibility of you getting back in the cage?
Switchery with the mics. I have been training, yes. Not as consistently as I would like to be because the UFC have me jumping on and off planes all the time. But yeah, I'm working towards it. I've just passed all of my medical results from my previous tests onto another cardiologist to start looking through. So, and I'm wearing this nifty little heart rate monitor, so I'm keeping a track of my exercise so I can pass all that information on. So I'm keen to fight again, you know, especially watching the sport grow as quickly as it is. I'd like to step back in there and have a couple more. I'm not interested in belts, rankings, and none of that, but I just like
Hardy versus McGregor, England versus Ireland.
Yeah. I'll take it. I'll take it.
How do you think you'd do against McGregor?
It depends what weight class.
At
really?
At 170.
At 145, I'm a corpse.
if Nate Diaz knocks him out at 170, I mean, well, the only reason why he didn't knock out McGregor at 170 was because McGregor decided to shoot in, and it was better to get choked out. If that's the situation, then at 170, McGregor's getting knocked out cold. Collar's conduct style against you.
Yeah, well, that was me asleep against Collar's conduct. But, you know, it's not mine. Yeah, I mean, it'd be a great fight. He's the kind of person that, you know, if you are within a couple of weight classes, you want to fight him.
Hey, if McGregor loses to Nate Diaz again, you know, you versus McGregor, England versus Ireland, what would the ratings be in that? I mean, that would be...
I think it'd be pretty good.
Fucking huge,
good.
Right?
I could sell a fight from time to time.
Yeah.
No, I have no real problem with him. But then again,
I mean, just as far as I mean, we're all dumb. Well, there's a few Australians and whatnot.
the England Ireland thing.
Yeah,
I mean, that's a pretty real rivalry. I mean, some people take it seriously, but for the most part, the newer generations are kind of seeing through it now, and it's much more of a.
All of a sudden, for like the Countdown Embedded series, Dan just gets real Protestant. He's like really, like seriously heavy Protestant. All of a sudden,
I'm gonna move to Boston and train with Marcus Davis.
Yes, yeah. Hey, there's a callback.
Yeah,
Marcus Davis still trying to erase the internet of all his gay porn images. Still working on it.
Yeah, thanks to him.
Who's next?
John's actually got a follow-up.
Okay, follow-up. So, good journalist,
so
sir. Follow-up.
If you come back, what weight division? Because I always thought you could fight at 155, possibly. And who would you like to fight?
And now you can
no
take
way
a seat,
he
John.
Makes 155. Right. Huh? There's no way. Because this guy is a vegan, yoga. He was one of the most healthy individuals I've ever been around. And he walks around. There's no way you make. There's no way.
Well, you know, when I was competing at welterweight, I was walking around about 205. I got up to 220 a couple of times, but I would look like...
Well, but I mean, you forced it, but I mean, for the most part, you...
I was always a fairly big welterweight, yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, you're a healthy guy. It isn't like you're eating fast food, drinking, partying. I mean, you're a very... As far as fighters go, you're one of the cleanest fighters I've ever met. You are a big welterweight. It's not feasible for you to make... I mean, unless you know something I don't know... You making lightweight is just not going to happen. I mean, your shoulders, your back. I mean, you're just not a lightweight.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I would like to give it a couple of goes. I've made 160 twice.
How did you feel?
I felt great. I won a world title at 160 in the UK. But to be honest, I did it all wrong at the time. I pushed myself too much. It was all about sitting in the sauna for as long as you could and just kind of drying yourself out.
So you think it's feasible that you could make lightweight? Mm. That's incredible. I guess that just goes more of a testament to what I'm saying is you as the cleanest welterweight I've ever met because you're a big welterweight. I mean, even when you fought GSP, you looked... I mean, I remember when you two stared off and you had the contacts in, you were the bigger out of the two, right? Did anybody see that? Yeah, sure. So, I mean, you're the bigger guy at welterweight and GSP is known as a bigger welterweight. For you to say you're going to go to lightweight, that's incredible amount of dedication.
I think I could do it. Honestly, I do. My weight this morning was 182. And I never walked around at 182 unless it was fight week. Do you know what I mean? So I'm walking around at my fight week weight now when I was fighting at 170.
That's to your diet and the fact that, I mean, yoga, which...
That's it. That's
you're
it.
Very much...
my wife... The reason he's laughing is because my beautiful wife's sitting over there and she is my yoga teacher. That's
you're pretty good at yoga if you're sleeping with a yoga instructor.
Super, super dedicated.
So, yeah, I personally, I think I could do it. I think I could do it. And as far as opponents go... I don't know. I mean, I don't want to fight anybody that's in the rankings that's trying to contend for the belt, because I don't want to, you know...
You and Diego are going at it on Twitter.
Well, he's always trying to get a fight out of me. I'm, you know, I made a comment a while ago about the fact that when he was on The Ultimate Fighter ages ago, he was a great fighter. He had good grappling, he had good wrestling, he would take people down, stifle them, choke them out. But then when he realized that people cheered louder when he fought faced first... Do you know what I mean? He just kind of embraced that brawler mentality. And I like to see that. I like to see people stand toe-to-toe and give it everything they've got. But that's not a game plan. That's not the first one you come to. You don't go, okay, opening bell. Unless you're Don Fry. That's the only guy that gets away with it. Do you know, if you're a professional athlete, you've got to have, you know, A, B, and C game plan. And the first game plan is, I'm going to see how hard I can hit him and see how many punches I can take in the process. It's just not smart. And if we're trying to keep the sport moving forward, he was at the Ultimate Media Day today, and, I mean, he couldn't keep his eyes together.
At the same time, I totally agree with you. But I think the reason why I could tell other people, other fighters, hey, listen, just get the win. Don't worry about putting on the best shows. It's because you have guys like Diego Sanchez who are just like, gonna fucking do that. Like, there's always gonna be a good fight when Diego Sanchez is fighting because of his ridiculous style, which is good for other guys. Like, let's say, I don't know, a Khabib, because he just wants to win.
Mm. Well, as somebody who's been in the room with Diego and someone who's been in the room with you, Dan, that is a bad fight for Diego.
Thank you.
Someone who's going to come forward and get caught with your shots, your knees, your mobility. As a friend of Diego Sanchez, you would say, that's not the fight to take. You're going to end up on a highlight reel and not the way you want it. You know that poster where Jordan's dunking on somebody? You're going to end up being that guy that got dunked on.
So let's get our next question. We're going to shift microphones. Everybody hand one microphone to your left because we get a working microphone that way. There we go.
All right. This is,
do we then all pass all the way back?
This is Matt from Australia.
All right.
And by
all
the way
from Australia.
GSP recently said he would even entertain 155. So amazing what you guys can do with your bodies. And shout out to Don Fry, who's getting inducted into the Hall of Fame on Sunday.
You know, I've just been hanging out with Don Fry. What a legend. But you can't understand anything he's saying because it's just...
Wait till you hear Matt from Australia.
I loved his quote. Did you see his quote about going to the Hall of Fame? He goes, came at a good time because my wife left me and my horse died. So if you're blind, come up and give me a hug. I'm not even paraphrasing.
He was talking to TJ Dillashaw at the time.
Who's that? All right, what's up?
I don't want to bring up bad memories, but there's been a lot of Hunt talk tonight, and I know that at the time of Hunt versus Mir, there was a lot of talk of the stoppage being early and before the fact, and there were reports that Frank came out and said that it was okay and that he thought it was justified. I just wanted to hear from the horse's mouth what he thought of the stoppage, what he thought of the fight, and how it all went down.
No, I agree with the stoppage. I mean, obviously, I'm upset like anybody else. You train that many weeks for a fight, you get caught with a guy. But, I mean, I made a mistake. The way I changed levels, I exposed the back of my head. He hit me right behind the ear. My equilibrium was completely off. Was I unconscious? No. So that's when people sit there and go, well, you look like you're still in it. I'm all, I was in it. But I saw Mark up here, Mark over there, Mark over here. I was looking at the referee. I didn't know who I was seeing. So was I unconscious? No. Was I able to defend myself? Not really. So, I mean, had he jumped in and hit me with a couple shots, could I have maybe regathered myself? Possibly. But for the referee, who I'm making eye contact with, why I'm sitting on my ass, I completely understand why he stopped the fight, and I'm not upset about it. And I think fighters have to be honest about themselves when they say that, because that way, if there is a fight where I feel is unjust, when I sit there and go, well, hey, this one was screwed up, people will believe me, because in this situation, hey, Hunt caught me with a good shot, I made a mistake, he won the fight. I'm not going to argue against it. If every time you sit there and go, nah, it wasn't worth it, you're not going to have any credence behind what you're saying. But honestly, I got caught, dropped down, and by a guy hits hard, he caught me in a good shot. That's heavyweight fighting.
What would you do if you had a rematch against him?
I would make sure I didn't duck that way again. even now, when I'm in the gym training, today I was working with my trainer, I make sure that when I duck, I don't turn my shoulders. That works in boxing because they'll call that shot a lot more. It doesn't work in MMA. So that's one of the defenses that I kind of acquired from boxing so many rounds, but that doesn't work for what we do. So now when I'm in the gym training, whenever I slip or roll, I make sure that my eyes are on my opponent. Because if I sit there, I mean, earlier in the fight, you see me throw a jab, he throws a right, I slip, and I'm fading off to the side. You see boxers do that all the time. But in boxing, you're only allowed to hit with your knuckles. Fun fact about boxing. If you hit with the knuckles, you're good. If you hit with any other part of your hand, it's a foul. You can't hit with your forearm. You can't hit with your elbow. Guess what? In MMA, you can hit with any part of your hand that you deem that throws.
So if, the fingers.
Right. So here's a good example. If Dan and I are fighting, if I throw an overhand right, if it's boxing, I better hope that the knuckles land. In an MMA match, I can club him and my hand completely be visible across his body.
I hate when that happens, though, because it's like when you get right there.
There's, you know what? That shot, though, I've been practicing because it messes you up. Because it doesn't drop your consciousness. It isn't like you're asleep. But if Dan and I are sparring, if I know we're sparring with MMA-type rules, forget it. I'm going to hit him with a shiver on the back of the head. Because I know that, well, I don't have to hit him with a hook and be as direct as in boxing I have to be. Well, if I catch him with any part of my radius, it's going to hurt him and stun him and throw him off, and maybe the right hand lines up. But that's the difference between our sports. And there is a difference. Is there a benefit in cross-training? Obviously, there is. You do a lot of Muay Thai. It's made phenomenal kicks. Boxing, we both love boxing. But is MMA boxing? Is it kickboxing? No, it's not. And I guess it's a long about story. I mean, what Mark did for his MMA, completely illegal and my fault. I shouldn't have ducked. If you watch the fight, when he throws the overhand right, I see it coming. And I start to duck, and I turn my ear towards him. In boxing, completely acceptable. In MMA, well, obviously it wasn't. I ended up taking the loss.
Thanks for the question, man. All yeah. Right. We got one more question.
Next
there.
Next up is, and then Brett from Canada.
All right. And okay, Brett?
Brett.
And if anybody else has a question, might as well get in line right now,
yeah,
right?
Brett. Okay, what's your question?
All right, so considering what we found out tonight, and we're in Las Vegas, I was wondering what you guys think the Las Vegas odds are on what he popped for.
Oh.
Wow.
Well, I mean, we kind of said at the beginning of the show, talking about John Jones, that it's got to be, because it was out of competition, this won't be a recreational drug, by my understanding of the way USADA works. It's going to have to be some type of performance
enhancing. No, I mean, everybody understands in competition and out of competition. Right. Out of competition drugs or anything that are performance enhancing drugs that will assist you on the night of the fight, whether it was healing, training up for the fight, that's out of competition. In competition means that whether it's 8 weeks before the fight or in competition starts 6 hours before your weigh-in till 6 hours till after the fight. And those can be marijuana, cocaine, recreational drugs. And obviously, no one's going to argue that those are performance-enhancing drugs. But for the safety of the fighter, besides if your last name's a Diaz, most people can't fight if they're high.
Unless you're from all right. Canada.
last question.
No, we have to answer the question. What do you think we thought?
Oh,
what do we think? Okay, do we want to guess what
know.
The...
I don't know. I mean, I can't help but feel it's got to be some kind of tainted supplement or something.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. After everything that's happened, to know how important this fight is for his legacy, you know?
Yeah.
It does... Although he's made mistakes in the past, I just don't see it being something that he's just going to throw away.
I will just say this, and if it turns out it's like a Yoel Romero supplement kind of thing or whatever, maybe it's that. But if it turns out to be anything he really does have to own up to, let me tell you what I don't want to hear from John Jones. Well, I'm young. I'm learning. You're like 30. Stop with I'm young. You know, that's always the thing. It's like, I'm young, I'm learning, no. Well, you're like a dad. You got kids, and it's
well. I mean, on one hand, he did become a huge bodybuilder recently. Like he just looked jacked in the last.
Oh yeah,
couple
the powerlifting.
So maybe some of his bodybuilder friends gave him something, maybe it was squirrel.
Maybe it wasn't. Maybe it wasn't chalk he was using for his grip.
It was what?
I agree with everybody up here.
Oh boy.
All right, last question.
All right, let me just say these three guys. Don't. I, for one, would like to keep my press credential for UFC 200, okay?
Honestly, though, to answer your question, I think that when it all comes said and done, it's going to be a tainted supplement. He's the kind of guy that doesn't... Honestly, I've hung out with John. If you sit there and start talking about protein drinks and different vitamins, he's looking at you like you're speaking Chinese. Yeah. Here's a guy, like I said, whose other two brothers in NFL. Genetics and athletic ability, no shortcomings. No. So the fact that if something's in his system, I'm willing to bet it's because someone told him to go down and take some new muscle generator or whatever at the local GNC. But guess what? The USADA doesn't care. There are drugs that right now any of you are legally allowed to buy. And if you walk into that GNC and you buy them, if you're a UFC fighter, you're screwed. You're not allowed to take them. And unless you're up on them and your manager's up on them, you're done.
Do you still not know what the hell you got popped for?
I have no idea.
It's fucking crazy.
It's crazy. You know, I've just done a recent UFC Fighters Summit. So they used to do, you remember the old Fighters Summit.
Yeah.
They used to bring 300 fighters into town and put us up at Red Rock. And, you know, there'd be all kinds of shoving and yelling and videos going up on YouTube and stuff of different fallings out. Usually Matt Mitrione and Tito, if I remember right.
I remember that one.
Yeah, it was a strange one. Anyway,
weird.
But they've just done one recently where they got 35 of the new signings, the top prospects, the people that they think are going to go on and be future stars. And it was really fascinating to sit in there in that room with all those fighters. But a big part of the talk was the USADA thing, the testing. And they were handing out little pamphlets and booklets. And one thing they had was a pen, right? You know, you get the cool pens that you flip upside down and the girl's, she's naked.
Yeah.
It was one of those kind of pens. I was like, oh, we're going to get one of those stripping pens.
Yeah.
It had this little roll of paper that came out with like 3,000 different things that you can't take.
Really? Well,
this is the most stressful pen I have ever owned.
Hold on. I have one weirder than that. I remember... Hold on. In Australia, after we weighed in, we go to the back. They hand us, and I still have them in my cupboard because I didn't really need to take it. They had these replenishing drinks that had all the amino acids or metabolites that you needed to take to replenish healthily after you've cut a lot of weight. So I'm like, oh, hey, shit, that's cool. So I took two or three of them. I started putting them in my ground. I'm like, I'll grab a bunch. And at the time, one of the USADA representatives goes, hey, by the way, I know we're handing these out, but again, these aren't USADA provided.
Oh,
you know.
Come on.
No, I swear to God, they told us that.
I believe you, but that's what they're giving
no,
you.
No, they said, they go, we're handing you these, but if you take them and you pop positive, it's still on you.
What the fuck?
So now I'm looking at them. That's why they're still sitting in my cupboard at home. I'm like, oh, like, what?
It's going to be an opportunity to use these.
Yeah, I'm like, so I guess I can sell these? That's I mean, like the, I don't know.
It's like the worst CSI show ever.
It's like, hey, you could take this drug, and I may or may not be a police officer who's selling you this drug. I'm like, wow, man, that's a really fucked up proposition you just made.
So it's right, one more question, then we're going to wrap
Randy
up. This
is Randy in San Francisco.
I love this guy, by the way.
Yeah.
He's the coolest. He came a long way from the Goonies.
It seems like the fighters like the early weigh-ins. It seems like that's the consensus, right? From a fan perspective, though, when you watch the weigh-in show now, I feel like it's lost some of the luster, and it feels like it's a fake weigh-in. And I was just wondering, from your guys' perspective, do you kind of see the same thing? It feels like a big production for... just doesn't have that like umph to it anymore.
I actually feel the same. I see both sides to it. I see the fighter's perspective, because if you can get on the scales at 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning and start rehydrating straight away, especially without the IVs as an option now, I think that's a great thing. But at the same time, as a fan, I like to see guys on the scales. How does he look on the scales? How's his weight cut gone? Has he got energy in the stare down? Because that was one thing. I remember fighting Roy Markham in my second UFC fight.
Knocked him out in 20 seconds.
Something like that, yeah. And I remember he'd had a really hard weight cut. He weighed in on the Tuesday before the fight at 195. So he had 25 pounds to cut that week. So I thought to myself, okay, he's going to feel really weak at the weigh-ins. So as soon as I step off the scales, I'm going to go and get my forehead right on his, and I'm going to drive him back as far as I can. And you kind of play those psychological tactics. If you've had somebody, I mean, maybe not heavyweight, because, you know.
No, I'll say, this whole weight gain question, I'm out of it.
But it's like, there's a game that can be played there. There's a psychological game, that, especially when someone's weakened from weight cutting a little bit. So I do see both sides of it. It is a bit of a strange situation to have them get on the scales. And what is even more strange, and I'm glad they stopped doing this, is having the guy fucking with the scales at the front. Like, no, they weighed in this morning, dude. You don't need to pretend. Yeah. We're grown-ups here. Although, you're not checking.
He's got to sell it, you know.
Nothing was better, though, when Mayhem Miller weighed in 24 pounds heavier and then took off his shorts as if that was the problem.
Oh, these are 25-pound shorts, definitely.
Well, it also doesn't make sense that there's no consistency, because some people take all their clothes off just to put it right back on when we already know what the weight is.
I would, you know what I would do? I would walk up naked, just with them following me with the towel. You know, I think that'd be a better show.
I never understood that. I still complain about it now with weights.
Now, have you ever got naked and then look at the ring girls to see if they're checking you out?
There were ring girls on the
stage?
His
wife's here.
Oh, sorry.
Perfect answer.
All right.
Scales. Where are the scales?
So here's what we're going to... Let's get George and Ghost back up here, guys. Come on back up here. We just want to make mention of a couple of things as we wrap up. Now, first of all, you may have noticed these snazzy phone booth fighting T-shirts that Frank and I are wearing. They're making their world debut tonight here at the LA Comedy Club. Not even available on the internet yet, and we will have them for sale out through the doors. Frank's wife and my girlfriend are going to be out there selling them, so you can stop by, express your condolences to them, and buy a T-shirt and be the first to own one. So they'd like to meet you out there. We'll be out there. We'll take pictures and everything. We're going to force Dan to take some pictures and he can stick around and all that. We want it. First of all, how about a big hand for the LA Comedy Club for letting us do this? Because seriously, thank you guys very much. I mean, we went way over. We told
them.
By the way,
Joaquin and Matt. I don't know if there's Matt still here. Matt, leave. Joaquin is a huge MMA fan. He's like the biggest. So like, just give it up for Joaquin because he loves the sport.
Yeah, man. Seriously, thank you very much for letting us do this. We really did. Everybody have a good time. Did you enjoy doing this? Second question, should we maybe do this again at some point? Would you guys come back out for this? Okay, all right, good. That's what I wanted to hear. But thanks to those guys for sticking around, staying open late, letting us do this and taking care of us. And thank you to the great Adam Hunter from MMA Roasted for sharing his stage with us. Adam is here. This is the part where you can throw out the old cliche, I'm here all week, and actually mean it, right? You're
right.
Here all week.
Yes.
Right? Shows through what,
tomorrow
Sunday?
Tomorrow night, guys. Tomorrow night, I'm here headlining, and also Dean Thomas and Leslie Smith are doing stand-up comedy.
Wow.
On the stage. Yes. So they're doing 5 minutes. It'll be Leslie longer than Leslie's fight against Cyborg. I'm kidding. She would fuck me up in 10 seconds. But yeah, they're doing stand-up comedy on the stage tomorrow night. So support them. They're amazing people. So they'll be here tomorrow night opening for me. And Frank Mir says he's doing comedy. Who here wants to see Frank do comedy?
Yeah.
Still need a little work on it.
Yeah, I'm trying to punch up his material just a little bit. But this, you're going to see
him
do
it. Between
the
two of you, though, I'd feel very comfortable going out there. If you guys
yeah.
You're strapped.
Laugh or else.
We're good.
I don't see you laughing. All right, so you can check out Adam's podcast, MMA Roasted. Let's tell everybody if they're not already subscribed. I think there was just the one lady not subscribing. How does she find it?
MMA Roasted on iTunes, SoundCloud, or in my pants. in my pants. Thank you very much. I'm engaged. Fuck. You're married? To who? Oh, fuck Dennis. But I'll be here, guys.
I like you.
Awesome. I'll be here tomorrow night, Friday night. I'm getting drunk because this fucker kept buying me shots. Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday, 8 o'clock. Sunday. Dan's coming to show Sunday,
I am,
right?
Coming on Sunday. I'll be here on Sunday.
Fuck right. Yeah.
You can get the Phone Booth Fighting Podcast in iTunes as well on Stitcher Radio. Two episodes now every week, Tuesdays and Fridays. And I tell you what, I'm not sure how many episodes we're going to upload this week. This guy is he is a podcaster gone wild. I thought it was going to be, okay, come on, Frank, yeah, we're going to do two a week. And he's calling me up like, well, don't you think we really should do one on Thursday as well? Because by the time we do Thursday, stuff would be outdated. So we're going to do a bunch of stuff for you guys this week, but
also,
that's how you get the podcast.
Also, the OGs of radio, fucking Goes and George.
Right. And that's I want to check in with these guys for a second. First of all, a big hand for George and Goes from MMA Junkie for coming out, hosting this thing for us. They provided radio support for us. They had Frank and I on to co-host the show. Really helped us promote this, and I know we got a lot of junkies out there, but I have said this to these guys privately so many times, and I want to say it publicly where everybody's listening. I have so much respect for what these guys do because they really are the true definition of like DIY radio. They started in their house and grew it into what it is now. They have this prime, I mean, most of you have probably been there, this unbelievable location over at Mandalay Bay where they do it, and that MMA junkie gathering is mind-blowing when you see that happen every year. So just so much respect for you guys, and just thanks both to you guys for sharing a little bit of that with us. You know, having the kind of the blessing from you guys is being something worth listening to.
They are the
best
homeless radio hosts that I've ever fucking seen in my entire life.
Oh, thank you, man. Thank you. Yes, yes. Ooh, you're a little light. That's okay. I'll catch up with that later.
Hey, thanks for including us. Seriously,
no,
this was a lot of fun. You guys knocked it out of the park. And Adam, your show is amazing. So anytime you're in town, we're count
you,
on us
you're,
to catch
you're a
it,
good
man.
Dude. And honestly, every time you come, you bring a different chick. And that's awesome, dude.
We appreciate you guys doing it. And Dan Hardy, he broke news. I didn't know he was starting a podcast. Now, this is bad news for you and me in the iTunes rankings because you know what's going to happen once he and John debut. But anyway, go ahead and tell us. When can we expect to hear this? When are you guys getting
this? Well, the first
this?
One's out, right, John? The first one is up. It's a podcast with no name right now. Yeah.
Oh, you haven't named it? So there's an episode somewhere that exists.
Yeah.
But
we
key
don't know
is
where.
To find it because it's not named.
SoundCloud.
It's in SoundCloud.
I don't know what that is.
Oh my gosh.
Is that Is that that thing in space that's got all the information trapped in it? Is that?
No, that's your iCloud.
Oh. It's called. Yeah.
If you can hack into Dan's iCloud, apparently the episode is there, so you can listen to it. All right, we'll figure all that out. We'll tweet out all the particulars and post it up. But Dan, thank you very much for doing this. Was you guys enjoy hearing Dan Hardy do this?
Thank you.
I thought it was fantastic. Hey, we got to thank all the folks that came out. John Gooden, we
mentioned. Oh, by the way, guys, anything right now at the bar is $5.
Okay. All right. Party doesn't have to end now.
If you want a drink, or that guy will blow you for $5. Great, the chick came over. That's weird. All right, so $5 for anything you wanted to drink right now.
All right. I know we had fighters come out, so thanks you guys for doing it. I think Angelo Reyes is here somewhere. He came out. Yeah. Is he here still? Angelo, are you here? Uh-oh. Okay. Something happened with Angelo on the way. We'll figure that out. Okay. Anyway, thank you guys very much. We're going to be right outside these doors hanging out, talking. Please come say hi, get a picture, whatever. T-shirts available out there. And give yourselves a big round of applause for being our first ever live stage audience. Thank you guys very much for coming. We'll see you outside. Thank you.